Good afternoon, everybody. So this afternoon, we are going to do the Suttas 87, Piyajatika Suttas, born from those who are dear. So the reason why I choose this sutta, because it's really relevant to all of us, whether you are monastic or you are lay person, it's really relevant. So it's not only applied to, you know, because some of the suttas are more applied to the monastic, but this is really relevant to all of us, whether you are lay or you are the monastic. So I will start to read out, and I will stop, and I will explain to according to how I understand these suttas. Then after, when I finish, you can you have any questions, you can, you know. Thank you. You can ask questions or any comments. Okay, so now we can start reading. So, thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta Groves, Anathapindika's park. Now on the occasions, a certain householder's dear and beloved only son had died. After his son's death, he had no more desires to work or to eat. He kept going to the Channa grounds and crying, "My only child, where are you? My only child, where are you?" So, and this householder, because he's come from the attachment, this is how we attach, you know. We not only attach to our body, we extend our attachment. So, from ourselves, from our children, we think that the children is part of us. So we have the ownership. We think they will own. We think that we own it because that when you have this ownership, then you have the feelings of you lost it. You know, I lose this because you own something. This is yours, part of me. The attachment. So this is how our attachment we extend. You know, we attach to ourselves, our own body, and then to our immediate family. You know, still me and I, my son, my daughter. You know, my parents, mine, still me, still part of me, the attachment. And then we will extend to more extended family, you know. And then to friends, my good friends, you know, still my friends, you know. And then to my country, you know, my people. And that is how, it's still mine. That is the boundary we still own. You know, that is the ownership that we have, the ownership there. So we, this is come from the sense of self. We identify, you know, this is me, this is mine. That is come, this attachment. So when we attach, that is how that this ownership, and we try to process it. So when we lost it, you know, then we think that we lose, you know, something, because we think that we own it. We think that this is me. I own this. My son is my son. My parents. This is mine. We got the ownership there. So this attachment. So a lot of people just think that, you know, when you love someone, you should attach to that person. The more you attach to the person, that means you really love that person so much. So actually, attachment actually to give rise to not only to ownership, also give rise to greed, you know. So we want that so much. We think that this is me and mine. And sometimes we can't get what we want. So what give rise? Hatred, isn't it? Ill will. So if a pure love is, if really true love, pure love is absent of this negativity. So that's why some people think that, you know, if you love someone so much, then you should attach to that person. If you are not attached to the person, so you don't love that person. So actually, that is the attachment that is not really come from the pure love. So this is how we have the ownership. So then we come to the next paragraph. Then that householder went to the Blessed One, and after paying homage to him, sat down at one side. The blessed one said to him, householder, your faculties are not those of one in control of his own mind. Your faculties are deranged. So how could my faculties not be deranged, Venerable Sir? For my dear and beloved only son has died. Since he died, I have no more desires to work or to eat. I keep going to the charnel ground and crying, my only child, where are you, my only child, where are you? So it is, householder. So it is sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. Venerable Sir, who would ever think that sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear? Venerable Sir, happiness and joy are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. Then displeased with the blessed one was disproving of them, the householder rose from his seat and left. He was very upset with Buddha. He disagreed with the Buddha. He said, how come, you know, you have a sorrow lamentation from the one that is dear to you? So he disagreed with what the Buddha said. So actually, one of the reflections that the Buddhas have been asked us to recollect and reflect on that, contemplate on that, is not only for monastic, but it's also applied, relevant to all of us, whether you are lay or you are monastic. So that is that all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. That is one of the suffering, isn't it? So when we associate, the Buddha said, when we associate with the one that we dislike, it's suffering. When we separate from the light, it's also suffering. So this is how, because we think that, you know, having the happiness is come from the person that we love. So this is how we think that the person gives us happiness. So when, for example, like someone that you like, maybe you meet someone that you really like, you know, because with the contact, so feeling arises. So it's either pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant, that more neutral feelings, like those, you know, we don't really take notice. So when pleasant feelings arises, so we have this attachment. When these unpleasant feelings arises, so we have ill will. So that's like when we have these pleasant feelings arises, so this is how we perceive, you know. We come from contact, so the feelings arises, then this is how we perceive. We perceive as this object is pleasant. So we think that this object gives us happiness. So we perceive that this happiness is come from this object or from this person. So actually we are not perceiving things purely. So it's we bend to us, you know. We've been perverted by our likes and dislikes. So this is how we then it's go into the thinking about that. Then we develop a view of this object. This view, how we view about this object. This object is happiness, or this object is, you know, bring me suffering. You know, this object is no. We put the label on that. It's good, bad, and then we carry into our consciousness. You bring that to, you know, carry over to our stream of consciousness. So next time when you meet this person, so this one I don't like. And then you have a lot of story about that person. So because we are not perceiving things purely, it's according to, because when feelings give rise to perceptions, then we're thinking about it, then we develop a view of that object. And this is how, that's why we think that, oh, this person bring me happiness. That's why when we believe that, so we have the view of that, this is happiness. when we associate with someone that we dislike. So we're so upset, isn't it? We think that our suffering is come from that person, or our happiness is come from that person. So actually we are not perceiving things purely. We've been distorted and perverted by our likes and dislikes. So whenever that is the feeling arises, is where that the attachment arises. You know, that is in this dependent origination. So when you have the contact, then you have these feelings. So when you have feelings, so you have these craving, you know, tanha. Then you come to attachment. You attach to your views, you attach to the object. So we think that the happiness is come from that object. So this is how, this is the happiness outside the body, the Buddha said. They said the Buddha always encourages us to pursue the happiness within ourselves. We are independent from the object. So sometimes this is how we identify, we think that our happiness come from our children or, you know, our partners. This person bring me happiness. If I lose this person, I'll be miserable. So then we are not really perceiving things purely. We don't see things as they really are. So it's been distorted. That's why the Buddha encourages us to pursue happiness that within ourselves. That is the happiness, for example, like from meditation, the happiness from when you're doing something good, you feel good about yourself, when you practice generosity, or you listen to a Dharma talk, you get inspired, or you read some suttas, you get inspired, and then you have this happiness. So this happiness is within yourself. It's not outside you, so you're independent. So this type of happiness, the Buddha said that this is wholesome happiness. And this happiness lead to peace, lead to freedom and liberation. If the happiness outside ourselves, like through the senses or from the object, or we think that, oh, only I got this, I got a new car, I'd be happy. So that kind of happiness will lead us to suffering, because it will not last. It's very fleeting, and then you want more and more. So that's why this is how we've been distorted. So we think that, you know, our children, you know, our dear one, they are the source of happiness. Without them, oh, I'd be miserable. When I lose them, I'd be miserable. So this is how we are not perceiving things purely. So of course, like ordinary people, that always think that, you know, how much happiness, you know, come from their own partners or, you know, family or the parents or the children or the close friend. So that's why we need to have put into practice a lot of practice that to be able to really penetrate through the Dhamma to see things as they really are, because we've been distorted by our views, our perceptions. So, and this person was so upset and he left because he disagreed with what the Buddha said, because he think that because his happiness is come from the son. So when he lose his son, then he be miserable. So then come to the next paragraph. Now on the occasion, some gamblers were playing with dice and not far from the Blessed One. Then the householder went to those gamblers and said, "Just now, sir, I went to the recluse Gotama, and after paying homage to him, I sat down at one side. When I had done so, the recluse Gotama said to me, 'Householder, your faculties are not those of one in control of his own mind.'" So repeat the entire conversation as above. "Venerable sir, happiness and joy are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear." Then, displeased with the recluse Gotama's words, disapproving of them, I rose from my seat and left. "So it is, householder, so it is. happiness and joy are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. Then the householder left thinking, I agree with the gamblers. So when he told the gamblers, and they agree with him, that, you know, yes, the Buddha, you know, what he said is not true, you know, it's not, you know, they disagree with what the Buddha said. So eventually this story reached the king's palace. Then King Pasanadi of Kosala told Queen Mallika, this is what has been said by the recluse Gautama, Mallika. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. If that has been said by the Blessed One, sir, then it is so. No matter, then king said to Mallika, he said, no matter what the recluse Gautama says, Mallika applies to it thus. If that has been said by the Blessed One, sir, that it is so. Just as a pupil applies whatever his teacher said to him, saying, so it is, teacher, so it is, so too, Mallika, no matter what the recluse Gautama said, he applies to it thus. If that has been said by the Blessed One, sir, then it is so. Be off, Mallika, away with you. So he said, you know, because you always agree with the Buddha, whatever the Buddha said, you said must be true, you know, like a couch, you know, you always think that he's right, whatever he said is true. So then the Queen Mallika addressed the Brahmin, Nali Janka. Come, Brahmin, go to the Blessed One and pay homage in my name with a head at his feet and ask whether he is free from illness, afflictions, and is healthy, strong, and abiding in comfort. Saying, Venerable Sir, Queen Mallika pay homage with a head at the Blessed One's feet and ask whether the Blessed One is free from illness and abiding in comfort. And then said this, Venerable Sir, have these words been uttered by the Blessed One? Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. Learn well what the Blessed One replies and report it to me, for Tathagatas do not speak untruth. Yes, madam, he replied, and he went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When the courteous and amiable talks was finished, he sat down at one side and said, Master Gautama, Queen Mallika pay homage with his head at Master Gautama's feet and ask whether he's free from illness and abiding in comfort. And he said this, Venerable, have these words been spoken by the Blessed One? Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. So it is, Brahmin, so it is. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. Then he continued to say, it can be understood from this, Brahmin, how sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. Once in this same Savati, there was a certain woman whose mother died. Owing to her mother's death, he went mad and lost her mind, wandered from street to street and from crossroad to crossroad, saying, have you seen my mother? Have you seen my mother? And it can also be understood from this how sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. Once in this same Savati, there was a certain woman, whose father died, and whose brother died, whose sister died, whose son died, whose daughter died, whose husband died. Owing to her husband's death, he went mad, lost her mind, and wandered from street to street, and from crossroad to crossroad, saying, have you seen my husband? Have you seen my husband? So, and it can also be understood from this how sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. Once in the same, in this same Savati, there was a certain man whose mother died, whose father died, and whose brother died, and whose sister died, and whose son died, whose daughter died, and whose wife died. Owing to his wife's death, he went mad, lost his mind, and wandered from street to street and from crossroad to crossroad, saying, "Have you seen my wife? Have you seen my wife?" And it can also be understood from this how sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. Once in this same Savati, there was a certain woman who went to live with her relative's family. Her relatives wanted to divorce her from her husband and give her to another whom she did not want. Then the woman said to her husband, "Lord, these relatives of mine want to divorce me from you and give me to another home I don't want." Then the man cut the woman in two and committed suicide, thinking, "I shall be together in the afterlife." It can also be understood from this how sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. And as you can see, sometimes like we attach to the person, you know, we separate from the person that we like is suffering, and we associate with someone that we don't like is also suffering. It's so much, and even we have good relationship. So sometimes we have forgotten, we think that we're going to live forever. So even with very good relationship, so if either one die, you suffer because you lost your you know. That's why even you have good, whether you have good relationship or not, you know. So you also suffer. So when the relationship is good, and you because it's this attachment, you lose that person, and it's also suffer. So then, delighting and rejoicing in the blessed one words, the Brahmin Nalijanga rose from his seat and went to Queen Nalika and reported to her his entire conversations with the blessed one. So then Nalika went to the king, Pasanagi of Kosala, and asked him, "What do you think, sir? Is Princess Wajiri dear to you?" "Yes, Malika, Princess Wajiri is dear to me." "So what do you think, sir? If change and alterations took place in Princess Wajiri, would you sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair arise in you? Change and alterations in Princess Wajiri would mean an alteration in my life. How could sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair not arise in me?" So he said, is it your daughter, the princess of prince, you know, if anything happened to them or they get sick, you know, or they have anything, misfortune, anything happened to them, you know. Of course, you feel sad, isn't it, if anything happened to our children or to our loved one or to our parents, you know, or to our immediate family. So what do you feel? Because they are dear to you, isn't it? So sometimes, I remember before my mother passed away, when I used to my all my friends, like sometimes my friend told me, my mom passed away. Oh, how old is your mom? I said, my mom is 80, you know. So I said, it's a good age. And that never hit home. I don't feel that you feel like, it's old enough to die. It's fine because it's not my mother, you know. It's never hit home. That until my mother, died, I can really see that it's different. No matter how old my mother, you know, even my mother lived until 100, you still feel like, my mother, because this is me and my mother, you know, we think that he's still not old enough to die because we don't have the attachment. Because if others, when your friends, parents, or your friend's husband, or someone that you don't know, that tell you that, this person died. You're just so equanimous, so neutral. It's okay, another person died. And then sometimes we think that we understand this impermanent. We know that we don't live. I mean, intellectually, theoretically, we understand. You know, we think that we understand this change, this impermanence, you know, because it's not happened to us. Then we think that, you know, oh yeah, of course, you know, we all die, you know. We will not live forever. But if until our turn, you know, to face that, it's a different story. So sometimes we think that we don't have fear. We have no fear when we face that. So we only know when the time comes to us, you know, the attachment. Then we can see how much attachment, you know, we have towards ourselves, towards our loved one. You know, only that we know how much attachment we have. But if it happened to others because we have no attachment, we think that it's okay. And then we think that, yeah, sure, you know, it's already, you know, this age, you know, they should die. So, but because it's someone that we do not attach to, it's different. So if it happened to us when we're attached to that person, then we feel a loss, you know, we feel sad, we have this grief, sorrow, lamentation. So then he said, yes, Malika Princess, Vajira is dear to me. So what do you think, sir? That is already passed. So the next one. It was with reference to this, sir, that the Blessed One who knows, see, accomplish, and fully enlightened said, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. So, what do you think, sir? Is the noble queen Vasubha dear to you? Is General Vidudaba dear to you? Am I dear to you? Akasi Kosala dear to you? Yes, Malika, Kasi and Kosala are dear to me. We owe it to Kasi and Kosala that we use Kasi sandalwood and wear garland scents and actually how to pronounce this word? Anjans, yes. So, what do you think? Because you see how we not only attach to people, we even attach to like places, you know, that we love, you know, the places that we like. And then we identify this is my place, you know, my country. This is how we extend our attachment, isn't it? Not only even to things. So we think that this is my home, this is my house. It's like I used to reflect that a lot. I always, you know, used to contemplate again and again. I always remind myself that Dhammasara is not me, it's not mine, you know. I can live any time because it's after a while we feel so happy, you know, and then settle and, you know, with the place and we feel so comfortable and then we just attach to the place, you know. Then we think that we stay there forever and then one day we need to leave the place. We feel so sad, isn't it? Because, oh, this is my place, this is my home. We can't let go. And becomes the home is become me and mine. This is how we extend our attachment even to object. This is my object. We can't let go of the object. This is me and my attachment. So, what do you think, sir, if change and alterations took place in Kasi, Kosala, will sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair arise in you? Change and alterations in Kasi and Kosala would mean an alterations in my life. How could sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair not arise in me? It was with reference to this, sir, that Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, said, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. It is wonderful, Malika. It is marvelous how far the Blessed One penetrates with wisdom and sees with wisdom. Come, Malika, give me the ablution water. Then the King Pasanadi of Kosala rose from his seat and arranging his upper robes to one shoulder, he extended his hands in reverential salutations towards the Blessed One and utters this exclamation three times. Honor to the Blessed One, accomplished and fully enlightened. Honor to the Blessed One, accomplished and fully enlightened. Honor to the Blessed One, accomplished and fully enlightened. So this is the whole suttas that born from those who are dear. So now, is any questions and comments? Any questions, comments about this suttas? Yeah.
It's a question around if you find sorrow and etc. In the loss of things.
Mm-hmm.
So with the happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, we all know that if you're going to lose something, you're going to get sad.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're really happy and high on a something really good is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Do we? I suppose the wisest thing is then to check yourself to make sure that this could fall as well. And yeah, it's sort of a question in there somewhere, is how to live your life around being happy, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yes, actually, since a lot of the teaching the Buddha did mention about how we make use of this wise reflection and contemplation to develop this mindfulness, because sometimes we tend to forget, you know, and again and again we bring back, we remind ourselves, because sometimes we take things for granted and we think that we always, you know, when you know, then we remind ourselves, then we sink in, and this is how we develop the mindfulness, that you know, that okay, yes, you know, I'm not will not live forever, you know. That sometimes, like only when things happen to us, only hit home, then only we realize that we all this time we take things for granted. We think that things always be like that, you know, will not change. And just now, I just came back, you know, from visiting one of our supporters. So she was being diagnosed cancer. Actually, because of this illness, it's really wake her up, and it's really bring her closer to her husband, and she realized how good is her husband. Sometimes you know how you take it for granted, you know, you just think that, you know, he's always there, he's so good. So now when he's ill, the husband look after her, and then she said, actually, oh, my husband is very good. So my husband, oh, now I'm good. Before that, I'm not that good, you know, because of the illness. And it's really wake her up, that because sometimes they, oh yes, I'm facing death, you know, then arouse the sense of urgency. Now she becomes like, she's very grateful. She said, every morning, she expressed gratitude. She said, thank you cancer that you send a message to me. Now she wake up that, you know, that this is cancer. Then I know that, you know, I don't have long to live. She become like, she make the most of it, what she got. And she becomes more, and I remember before she went in, the next day she had to go for this operation. And she said to me, she made a determination to keep the five precepts well. She said she will not break the five precepts, and she aroused lots of faith in her. So they say it's important that sometimes we keep reminding ourselves, we contemplate and reflect, you know. And actually the more we do that, actually this wisdom, you know, we will arise in us, because it's sinking. The more we go, and becomes part of that, you know, sometimes we tend to forget. So that's why it's good, it's part of, because one aspect of the mindfulness actually is you remember. No? So that's why when to develop, when to always remind yourself, and actually it's one aspect of the mindfulness, you develop this mindfulness as well. That's why the Buddha said it's important that we, this wise reflection. So because sometimes it easily, you know, the mind get you know, sucked into all these negativities, you know, fault finding. But when we fill our mind with this wise reflection, actually it's really help us to arouse this sense of urgency and also have this insight. Actually, it's important. When I was a young monastic, when I was a trainee monastic, when I was still anagarikas, I used to do that. Sometimes I do walking meditation. Sometimes I focus on my foot, my movement, my sensation. But sometimes I do reflection. I walk up and down, I reflect. You know, all those to sink in, to have a sense of monastic, like I used to contemplate and reflect that, you know, I'm no longer living according to worldly aims and values, you know, and I'm the owner of my own karma, and all, you know, I'm heir to my karma. I reflect on that. And actually it's helped me a lot. I feel sometimes I was really inspired. I feel really good and arouse lots of energy. And it's always keep reminding, because sometimes it becomes, you know, when you used to a place, you know, and then after a while you get slack, then you forgot. But this contemplation, this reflection actually is help. That's why it's very useful. Actually, in this Akutara Nikaya, the Buddha did mention that it's whether you are Sangha, you are lay, we should reflect that very, very often. The Buddha said that I'm subject to old age, sickness and death. I'm the owner of my karma. You reflect that. And all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. So when you then, actually when you reflect on that, actually it's helped you not to take things for granted. Actually you become more appreciative. So when you have that gratitude and appreciation, this is actually is a positive, wholesome qualities, and it's helped you to actually this reflection help you to develop this quality. So the more you do that, and your mind, like, you know, it's just like you have the mind inclination, you incline towards that. So the more you do that, you have that, you know, becomes a second nature. You know, your mind is just have that inclination. That's why the Buddha said, why the Buddha called this wise reflection, we contemplate. That's why it's very important. So while things gone on well, we reflect on that. So when something happened to us, it's not a shock. Some people really are shocked, they couldn't take it. So, you know, then when we have that, we prepare. Because we all cannot run away. We got to face that moment to come. Either we die or our loved one die. So either one, we have to face that moment anyway. So that's why we now practice. Now we keep practicing, you know, to prepare that for that moment to come. Not to think that, you know, we live forever. You know, some people say, if I should die, you know, they think that they will not die. If I should die, you know, we will die, you know, we will not live forever. They say it's important to keep reminding ourselves. Then we will live our life more fully, with not to waste our time projecting the future, worrying about what is going to happen. And that is really completely waste of our time. But because of this reflection, it really help us to have a sense of urgency. And we just so grateful that the fact that we're still breathing. I remember because when my father passed away, 3 months, my brother passed away. I have two, you know, within 3 months, you know. And actually, it's a very powerful teaching, a message. And it's really made me feel, I did a lot of mindfulness on that. I reflect on that, you know. I made that any time. I remember that time I was in Thailand, Wapanarachat. So every morning when I wake up, early in the morning, in the first thing, I say, wow. I said, I'm still alive. Oh, I'm still breathing. And I'm so grateful that the fact that I'm alive. Oh, I have one more day to practice. That I really practice really the full. I work a lot. I meditate a lot. I sleep very little. To me, I said, oh, I'm not going to waste my time to sleep. You know, because if I die, I can sleep forever. So I sleep very little, but I have lots of energy because I did a lot throughout the whole year. This mindfulness on death, you know. And it's really helped me arouse a lot of energy and faith. And I feel so grateful that the fact that even I'm still alive, because I know that death might come to me anytime, then I become a lot of energy. Actually, it's really very useful, and you become more appreciative, and you will not take things for granted. You know, and you really live your life, you know, you arouse a sense of urgency to practice. So actually, yeah, it's very good that, you know, even though nothing happened to you, everything goes on very good, actually it's good for you to reflect very often. For example, to reflect that I'm subject to old age, you know, sickness and death is come to me. You know, I will separate from my loved one, and that should come to me. I will die any moment. You know, I don't know when is my next breath will come in. That you keep, you know, reflecting on that. Actually, it's really very, very useful. I find that it's really powerful and give you lots of energy to practice. And you become more appreciative. You have lots of gratitude. When someone has lots of gratitude, you have lots of confidence and faith, not only in yourself, like self-confidence, and also you have the trust in yourself, and also because when you have that in you, you have that towards others. And this is these qualities in one thing leading to another. So they say it's good. And also, it's good that a lot of people ask me one question like that, you know, I have lots of thinking, and sometimes all those rubbish, what can I do? I said, please, don't try to stop your thinking. This is a lot of people try to stop the thinking. The harder you try, the worse. So sometimes it's very useful to make use of this wise reflection. You replace the thinking. Replace with the wholesome thinking. So when with this wholesome thinking, this wholesome thinking, and that leads you to calm. It's calm you down. Actually, it leads you to peace. Then it will disappear because you cannot stop the mind. Because when the mind is active, you cannot. You cannot push it. You cannot make it stop. So you have to make use of all these skillful means to help yourself to stop the thinking. You know. So any more questions and comments? Is it make sense to you? Yeah? Okay. Any more questions or comments? Please.
I remember one of the suttas, I'm not sure which one, the Buddha mentioned about objects, losing objects. For instance, if you buy a piece of jewellery, it's subject to be lost or stolen. So you think of that at the time of buying the object. I could lose this. It could be stolen from me. And then, like you just said, you don't get so upset about it. So anything, if you break a nice piece of crystal... Well, it was subject to break, so you don't worry about it. So it's thinking about it at the time of purchasing, which I thought was very very important and very interesting.
It's good to keep reminding ourselves because we are very forgetful. After a while, we forgot, you know, we think that, you know, this thing will stay with us forever. So it's nothing happened. So when we have that, actually, it's really good. It's really, lessen our suffering. It's really useful to have that, you know. So not to think that we own everything. We keep reminding ourselves again and again. Even the Buddha said, even this is the advice not only that the Buddha gave to monastic, to monks and nuns. They said, please, reflect again and again. Remind yourself again and again. This will happen. So then when it's happened, then it's not a shock. And you have less suffering. It's, you know, because because you know that any time you will lose, you know, the one that you love. But maybe you still have a bit of sadness there, but at least it's lessen the suffering. So any more questions?
Venerable Aspanya, Yesterday you were talking about fear. And just in the weekend I've been reading this book, the 31... 31 spheres, places to be reborn. And then they went to visit the hells. And I got such an enormous fear rising in me. And is it skillful to use fear as a motivator or not?
So when the fear arises, and sometimes depends if you be able to just observe the fear. Sometimes when the fear go to the maximum, and it's just subside by itself. But sometimes you find it very difficult. So how is the fear? Like, is it arises and it just pass away?
Well, it was very strong when I started to read about what, because it seemed to me quite minimal things that people had minimal. I mean, some of them were very bad, but some of them were quite minimal to be reborn in these dreadful hell realms.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the fear's lessened now, but at that time, it really chilled me. You know?
Okay. So actually, it's very good that sometimes you bring in some reflection. So you reflect on your own morality, your own generosity, your own goodness. Actually, the Buddha encourages us a lot. We're not only doing good. Actually, he's encouraged us to rejoice in that, to reflect on that. And this is how to keep that in mind. That, and also, yes, it happened to me once when I was in Thailand. And I was alone, and at that time, because because they all went to Ajahn Blen celebration, you know, his birthday. So the woman section said, I didn't go because I don't like to go to all these celebrations because it's not busy, noisy. I don't like to go there. So I left behind. So that the area that I stay actually is a cemetery, and I was alone. And it was really storming and thunderstorm. I was left there, you know. And it's all in a certain, I have fear. The storm, because it's just very thin roof, and it's just, I feel like, oh, what happened if I die now? Then I said, well, and that moment I said, okay, well, what can I do? If this time I'm going to die, I'm going to die. Even I worry about it, I can't do anything. Actually, that moment when I reflect on that, then I started to think, yeah, and haven't, you know, in my life, I haven't have this, you know, intention that like deliberately causes anyone harm or hurt. Of course, sometimes, like, unintentional, that is different. Sometimes you don't know what you said. Sometimes you think that you're making fun of someone. You do not know that it's a hurt someone. That is different, but, like, deliberately have intention to cause anyone hurt or harm. So I say, no. So I've been, you know, practicing diligently, and I keeping the precept. So once I reflect on that, I feel have a sense of a security. I feel the trust in my own goodness, in my own honesty, integrity, and I feel good. You know, then immediately you feel you really feel very, you know, a sense of, like, you know, actually it's important why the Buddha said this generosity. Sila, you know, the Sila Samadhi, the four foundations, the Buddha said this is the four foundation stone. They said generosity, when you do something good, it's good to reflect. It's good to rejoice. A lot of people think that, oh, no, I shouldn't reflect. Oh, make my ego big. Actually not. The Buddha actually encourages us to rejoice that. So next time when you have that, it's good that you bring in what you have done, you know, rejoice in your own goodness, rejoice at Sila. Actually give you lots of faith and confidence in yourself. So the fear of being reborn in, you know, health and all this immediately subside. It's very useful to reflect on that, especially we do something good. You know, sometimes we tend to underestimate and our the power of our own goodness. Actually, our goodness is the power of our own goodness is very, very powerful. Please make the most of our own, the power of our own goodness to help us with our practice. So, is it make sense to you? And is it okay? Any more questions or comments?
Venerable, I'm not quite sure how to phrase this question, but it has been said to me that to have an expectation sometimes is to have attachment. So say you are dealing with a person and you have an expectation of some sort of skillful or good behaviour, and then this doesn't occur, and you become upset, I'm told that on your own part to become upset is attachment, because you've had an expectation of how someone should behave. What can you say about that?
Yes, because you are getting not what you want. Because you expect the person. This is how this actually is always come back to the sense of self. How we identify. For example, we identify this is my son. So because you are my son, you should behave this way. You should live up to my expectation. So that's why it's important that we practice loving kindness. A true loving kindness that is no boundary and no barrier. No identification. It's just another being. That person is not my son. I realize it also for myself when, you know, I have a son. And I realize it when I started to identify that this is my son. And I really feel that I'm being separate from my son, because that is a barrier that, you know, he is my son, this is the mother. And that is a boundary. That is a barrier. Then I feel that, yeah, that is not true love. You know, that is not love. A true love is, what is loving kindness? Loving kindness, there is no boundary, no barriers. That is the true loving kindness. True loving kindness is to melt down the barriers between ourselves and others. You know, so we extend, we open. So we open the door of our heart, allow others people to come in. When we start to identify, that is where the problem comes in, the attachment. Then we want the person, you know, we identify the person is like that. So that person should by that, you know. For we put the label on, the identification. Like, for example, some people, you know, have the image of themselves. Oh, I'm a good person. I'm a kind person. Oh, I'm so good. And maybe one day that she realized that actually I'm not that good. You know, sometimes I do, because I try to please people and they praise me. You know, I know that you might, you know, when I remember when I was still a lay person, I when I started to practice, you know, you were so enthusiastic, you know, to try to help these, very helpful. And then I always identify myself as a kind, nice person. And one day, you know, as you practice, sometimes when you reflect, and I start to investigate, and I realize that actually when I'm doing that, I do have very subtle that, like, I'm pleasing others, people, I'm helpful, I'm kind, because I want people to say that I'm a good person. And I realize that I can see that. I find it so difficult to accept that. Make me so long. I feel like I try to give myself all sorts of reason, you know, try to justify, but, no, I'm not like that, but, I keep struggling so much until a point that I said, okay, please, come on, just admit it, accept that, you're not that kind. So actually the moment when I accept that, I feel much a relief, because sometimes the struggle, because we have that sense of self, who we think we are, we identify ourselves like, I'm a good person, I'm a kind person, I'm this, I'm that. So one day when you started to practice and you see that, so we rather think, we rather rejoice and that, you know, that we awake to, that we can see that, You know, actually, it's a big step. We'll be able to see that. Rather, how many people can see that, that they're coming from that? So rather than thinking, oh, I'm such a terrible person, I'm not really that kind. But you look at it, you know, that actually, it's not what we're experiencing is really mattered. Are we awake to this moment? Are we awake to what's happening, you know, in this moment? That is the most important thing. We are awake to that. That is the wisdom. That is the insight. That is important. So, as you can see that you have that, actually, it's already a big step. At least you're awake to that. Some people still, you know, get sucky, go on and on and on, and have lots of suffering. So that's you learn. So actually, it's really a big step. Rather than we don't know, we still think that, you know, living in denial, think that we're such a good person, and we just try to push it away. You know, then actually it's good you it's good that you reflect on that, you know, you accept that, and you know, and each time you see that it's okay, it's fine, you know, just accept that, you know, and you know that you need more to work with that again and again, because even though this is the mind, you know, it takes time, it's a gradual training. For example, like even now, this time, if you don't react to that emotion, doesn't mean that next time it won't come up, it still pop up, but it's less intense. So slowly and then again and again, it's getting less and less and less, and this is how it eventually is eradicated. This is how we cannot use willpower to try to push it away. It doesn't work that way. So if we can use willpower, then the Buddha's teaching of non-self is not the truth, you know. So we cannot. It's non-self. It's non-self. You have to keep practicing. So does it make sense to you? Does it answer your questions? Okay. Any more questions or comments? Okay, there's no questions or comments, then we can finish today our sutta class.